Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, and today I'm joined by Alexandra Adamson. Alexandra, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Colin.
Today we're talking about how to take ownership over your sales career, but I want you to give me some context over where you've earned some of this hard-fought knowledge, because I know you're executive director at Women in Sales now, which doesn't sound like a super prospecting or sales heavy role. Talk to me about why people on the show should be listening to you.
Yeah. So, you know, I started my career actually out in San Francisco on the talent side of things. I was at Betts Recruiting, which is an agency that focuses on scaling sales, marketing, customer success teams for high growth companies. Was one of the early employees out at Betts in San Francisco. I got there when we were still under 30 people and was fortunate enough to spend about 3.5 years there scaling the revenue teams for some of the fastest growing companies in the Bay Area. So Zenefits was one of my big accounts, Everstring, Tintree, Marketo, got to see the way a lot of these really incredible VPs of sales were growing their teams and scaling their teams, and was fortunate, I think we talked before this, was fortunate to work with some people at those companies where I hired them in as individual contributors, and then they grew into leadership roles, became an SDR manager, VP of sales. And so I really got to be a part of their entire sales career. After my time at Betts, I ended up
just before we move on, to add some context, this is not just like any sort of recruiting. You went from sort of, you were there when they were super early in like 30 people and you left at around 150 people.
We were about 150. We were international at that point. So we'd gone from having a San Francisco office to then also having New York and Austin locally. I helped scale our Palo Alto office as well when we decided to go down to Silicon Valley. And then we had also launched Dublin and London. So at that point, Betts was huge, had worked with hundreds of startups on scaling revenue teams. And I think what was really exciting about that time was it was, 2013 to 2016 when we were seeing a ton of growth in the Valley. These companies were realizing that if you brought in a great sales team, you brought in an amazing sales leader, your company was going to grow that much faster. And VC funds were starting to partner with Betts and other agencies who could help scale those functions. And so, we were privy to working with teams, even like Andreessen. We helped Andreessen's team with scaling their internal platform team. And, that's when Jamie Buss was over there before she went over to be a VP of sales at Zendesk. And Cranny was still there before he went to SignalFX. And so, I was able to just kind of be a sponge and soak up all of this knowledge from these folks who had been scaling teams for a long time and knew how to do it, and were going to different companies and were spreading that knowledge.
And Jamie Buss, I can't remember the episode. I want to say it was like 52 or something like that, but definitely one of the most knowledgeable podcast guests we've had on the show. She learned a lot from Mark Cranny, who was at Andreessen, who, if you've read the book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, in my eyes, basically comes across as the hero of that book. I know it's a book about technology startups. I'm like, I don't know. This is a book about one VP of sales and his monumental journey to make these two guys successful. So
it's true. And I think it's one of the things that made so many of those early Andreessen companies so successful, or rather those Andreessen companies successful in their early days, because they were able to generate revenue really quickly and do it efficiently. And, I think Jamie was an exceptional sales leader internally for them there. Actually, I remember being on a call with Jamie when she was still at Andreessen. She was scaling that internal SDR function there and was about to go into labor. And she was still on the phone with us talking about closing this SDR candidate, because that was such a priority for her at that time. And I think that energy and that urgency and that sense of intense care about your internal team and making sure that your revenue function was going to be hugely successful really trickled down. And Andreessen's portfolio companies were so fortunate to have people like that there through their investors.
Yeah. Anybody that had exposure to Jamie, I'd say, you know, on a regular basis was, or Mark for that matter, was probably in a fortunate position. And like, if you think back to, when I think back to 2013, 2014, like how many SDRs did Zenefits hire all at once?
So
rumors of 500, but I think that was probably exaggerated.
That might have been an exaggeration, but Zenefits did scale really quickly. You know, they pulled over Sam Blonde from EchoSign right after that acquisition, and Sam had had a pretty successful career as an individual contributor, and then got some VP management experience under his belt, and went over to Zenefits and really scaled it quickly. You know, I think they went from 10-ish sellers to over 100 well within a year. Then they scaled out that Phoenix office. So you know, Robbie Allen was actually someone that I had hired as an SDR when they were under 30 people. He then became an SDR manager at Zenefits in San Francisco and then was tapped to go run the team out in Phoenix when they decided to scale the team out there. So that was a great example of a relationship I was able to keep from, hey, you should go work at this company because they're scaling and growing really quickly, to now I'm hiring for you. And, you know, I'm still fortunate to work with Robbie. He's at Sastr now. And that relationship has meant so much. And I think we've both
can hold it over his head together. Like, hey, I got you that first job. You basically owe me, Robbie, if you're listening.
I would never. It's virtually impossible to hold anything over Robbie's head because he's like 6'8". So, he's someone who I really value. And I think a lot of those folks from the early Zenefits days have gone on to do incredible things. Tyler John, actually, who was leading, I think he was leading their mid-market team for a while, is now the VP of sales for TripActions out here in New York. And it's been really fun to watch some great leaders come out of that org.
That's really cool. And so such a great exposure to such amazing talent when you're at Betts. And then you transition that into, you're a director of talent for Bowery Capital. So tell me about that experience.
Yeah. So I was introduced to the team at Bowery at the end of 2016 when the opportunity came up to really scale a platform team for Bowery. So as I kind of mentioned with Andreessen, these VCs started to realize that having a team internally that focused on portfolio support was something that could be really, really helpful. So Bowery is a seed stage fund based here in New York, but with portfolio companies all over the country. And Mike Brown, the managing partner, was really focused on this revenue play and wanted to make sure that his portfolio companies had the right expertise when it came to building revenue teams. So we were introduced. I ended up packing up my life and moving out to New York and started January 6th of 2017 at Bowery. We were still really, really small. It was three investors and me. I ended up hiring Andrew Odo as our director of growth in March of that year. Andrew had been an early sales hire at Chartbeat out here in New York, and then was the first sales hire for a company called CrowdTangle that was later acquired by Facebook. And so he had that early sales experience at startups before and was someone who could come into the portfolio companies and say, hey, let's go through your sales process, really unravel this, figure out, you know, if we're even pricing this correctly, what do we need? And then on the flip side, I was able to sit down with these founders and say, okay, this is what we're doing well on the sales side. This is what we're not doing well. And this is where we need to bring people in so we can be more successful. And I would go out and find those early sellers. So usually it was in the early days, a couple of Renaissance reps who could run everything. And then once they raised that Series A, okay, now it's time to bring in more formal sales leadership. And then you get to, you know, Series B. Great, let's bring in a CRO. And if you're a first-time founder and you've never done that before, scaling a sales team can be super daunting. And I was fortunate in that that's all I'd been doing for the 3.5 years at Betts. And now I could deploy it to a smaller group of companies and really get in the weeds with them because I knew everything about the org and you know, could boil down exactly what made sense and then teach these founders how to do it. So when I stepped away, they had all the tools and knowledge they needed to successfully grow that on their own.
That's really cool. That must have been a great opportunity to sort of apply some of that knowledge. And then you, from Bowery, now you're at Women in Sales, but I think we skipped a step in there. So tell me about how you got to Women in Sales.
Yeah. So when I got to New York in January of 17, red-eyed, bushy-tailed, so excited about my new city, everything was going to be great. I started working on one of my first searches out here and realized very quickly I'd left a good part of my network, if not all of my network, in the Bay Area. And so I had this oh shit moment. Like, I need to figure out what the startup sales scene looks like in New York. And one name that kept coming up was Jordan Wan. Jordan Wan is the founder and CEO of CloserIQ, recruiting agency based here in New York that focuses on sales hiring. And so Jordan and I sat down and grabbed coffee and just hit it off. I thought he was really smart about the way he was approaching the talent scene and had some, you know, amazing networking groups here in New York that he connected me with, and, you know, just kind of kept that relationship going. And so we would catch up every month or so, grab coffee. And a topic that we kept coming back to was this pain point that he was coming up, or companies were coming to him with, which was women in sales. A lot of the clients of CloserIQ at the time were, you know, Series A, Series B companies who had a couple people on their sales team, or maybe had more than 20 people on their sales team. Mm-hmm. And they were looking around and going, oh my gosh, we only have guys. Where are all the women? And so the reaction was, tell our recruiting partners they can only send female candidates. So then they call CloserIQ, they call whoever they're working with and say, hey, we need more women. We've set this arbitrary quota this quarter to hire X amount more women. And so Jordan's, you know, question to me was, are you seeing this? Is this something that you've dealt with? How are you working with Bowery portfolios on this, portfolio companies on this, et cetera? And, you know, at the time I was fortunate in that at Bowery, when I was building the teams from the ground up, this was something we could get ahead of and be very proactive about. But this topic kept coming up, and so we decided to do an event series, and the event series was just a panel in New York, and we had over 100 people come. It's about women in sales. VPs of sales that were women spoke, and I moderated, and it's like, oh, that was cool. We should do another one. And so Women in Sales was kind of unofficially born October of 2017 and continued to grow and scale. We obviously started in New York, then ended up going out to Boston, then San Francisco, and by the beginning of this year, realized it was enough of a living, breathing thing for me to come over and do it full time. So in April, I transitioned out of Bowery, and now I'm here focusing on scaling this globally.
Wow. That's really cool. And like, as a woman, why sales as an opportunity? Why not any other career?
Yeah. So I firmly believe that sales is the best career in the world for women because it's a meritocracy. Numbers don't lie. If you're doing your job well, you are setting yourself up for success and setting yourself up to take ownership of your career. And that's a topic we talk about a lot within the community, is knowing how to take your success in sales and put yourself in a position to keep growing by saying, hey, not only am I, you know, delivering on X, Y, and Z, but here are the other things that maybe I don't talk about as loudly as others on the team do. You know, women tend to not talk about their own successes quite as much as men. Women tend to not raise their hand for promotions or even apply to roles unless they hit 100% of the job descriptions. I think we've all seen those statistics.
We're 110% sometimes.
Yep. You know. And so a lot of what we talk about with women in sales and a lot of what our panels focus on and what our mentors work with younger members of the community on is saying, hey, don't focus on what you don't have, focus on what you do have and start positioning yourself in such a way that you can advocate for yourself for that promotion. Or you can say, hey, actually, I don't want to move into management. I want to do something else because I've noticed this is a pain point in the org that needs to be fixed. So I'm going to go do it.
That's great. I totally agree with you. I would amend your statement just because I'm not a woman. I would say sales is the greatest career because it is a meritocracy. I think for any group, no matter how you slice it, mm-hmm. what attracted me, and I know I'm sort of the opposite group, but I was, you know, I had most of my college. I didn't go to a top school locally. And I was able to come into the career and, you know, because you're, you know, willing to put the hard work and learn, and, you know, and really push yourself, you're able to make sort of six figures regardless of income class or whatever characteristics that sort of define you on the inside or on the out. So I think that was the thing that attracted me. And I totally agree. It is one of the best professions, and I'm, you know, founder CEO over here, but I still consider myself as in sales. I'm still part of our rev team. And that's not going anywhere. So
every founder is a salesperson, whether or not they like it. And that was something I used to talk about at Bowery all the time with founders of our portfolio companies. It didn't matter if you were technical by nature, your founder is always going to be selling, you know, from day one till IPO or whatever that looks like. If your founder is not selling, they're not doing half of their job.
Yeah.
So I think sales is one of the best career options, to your point, for anyone. But I think for women, it's something that naturally a lot of women tend to shy away from, because the terms that get associated with sales are hungry, aggressive, gritty, and those aren't typically terms that women associate with. But when you start to really dissect what makes a great salesperson, sure, those things are all very important, but they're not necessarily the most important. And so, you know, we work with companies on helping them reframe their job descriptions so they are more accurate to what actually is going to make someone successful in their org.
I thought that was the silliest idea I'd ever heard a few years ago. You know, how you write a job ad could have an impact on, you know, who you come in or who comes in and applies, until we, you know, we hired our first 10, and I know I've told the story on the podcast before, so I won't go into it in detail, but basically we hired our first 10 people and they were all hockey dudes that looked like me. And it was basically a locker room. It's like, well, this isn't very good. We need to change this. And so somebody suggested, you know, your job description is basically your landing page, right? We spend all this time optimizing landing pages. Why wouldn't we do the same for a job ad? It's like, okay, that makes a ton of sense. And we made a couple of tweaks. We removed some overly bro-y language. And all of a sudden, I think not intentionally, we weren't trying to hit a quota. We just didn't want to hire a bunch of people that the next 10 people couldn't look exactly like me. Because obviously if you're only hiring people that look exactly like you, you're missing out on a ton of great candidates that don't look like you. And so just by the nature of opening that up, we did a scorecard and sort of walked through that, the whole who process. All of a sudden, I think our next four or five hires were females. It wasn't because we were trying to only hire women. It was, they just happened to be the best candidates.
Right. And I think scorecards are phenomenal. I mean, for anyone that's using Greenhouse right now as an ATS, one of the things that I love most about the tool is it has a great scorecard setting. It has a lot of bias training embedded in the tool. And so you can train your team on how to interview effectively for skills, as opposed to, do I like this person? Do I feel like I could get a beer with this person? Because there are a lot of people I love, and some of my best friends are, you know, people I want to spend time with every day, but doesn't mean they're going to be great salespeople or be right for a startup. And I think that's also something to touch on is, you know, there's a very big difference between someone who's a great seller and someone who's a great seller for a startup. And a startup at the seed stage and a startup at Series C or Series D are two very, very different things.
Very different.
So that's another thing to pay attention to.
For sure. You got me on I was like, oh, I'll look at Greenhouse and like, what's their pricing like? It's like, okay, no, come back to the episode. we do all our scorecards in like Google Docs and sheets and forms and all that, but we don't want to talk about hiring too deep into the hiring process. The question I was really asking is, if sales is a meritocracy and it's the best career in your opinion for women and for my opinion, in my opinion, for everybody, why don't we just show up and let our numbers do the talking? Why do we even need to take ownership over our career? If by nature of, by just doing well, we're going to do well.
Because in an organization, there are so many moving parts. There are your manager, your manager's manager, everybody is focused on a million different things, especially in a startup. Again, if we go back to that. So it's important to raise your hand and say, hey, reminder, this is what I'm doing to advance the company's goals. These are some of my successes. And there is a little sense of having to bring that to the table and not assume that people are going to see it. A lot of the time, your direct manager might, But it's even helpful just to highlight these things, right? That's a great time during QBR reviews, during one-on-ones, things like that. If there's a goal that you're working towards, make it very clear that you're doing everything to position yourself to take that next step. And you can't assume that people are just going to see it, because everybody's got a million things going on. And yeah. I think that's actually something we don't tell young sellers enough. And it's something that I think isn't innate for a lot of women. And so being told that is important.
That's fair. So what are some of these things that you can be doing to make sure that you're preparing for that next step?
Yep. So I think having an internal board, having a good mentor network is so important. Your mentor network is made up of people who not only, I would actually say it's important to have a mentor internally, but it's more important to have mentors external to your company, because there are going to be times when you have questions about things, the way things are running internally at your company that maybe you shouldn't be bringing to somebody that works there. So having somebody externally that you can bounce ideas off of is super important. You know, having mentors that are even outside of your direct function is super important. Having someone who might even be younger than you. We have a couple of VPs in women in sales who have younger mentors, because they're managing teams of people who are younger than them. And so they go to their younger mentors to get a pulse check on, like, am I communicating this properly? Does this even make sense? And so I think having a really diverse group of mentors and people that you can go to bounce ideas off of is important. They're also the ones who, when an opportunity comes up in their network that might be great, they can throw your name in the ring and say, hey, this is something you should really consider. Or, hey, you should talk to this person because she or he is really capable. And having those advocates in your career make taking next steps so much easier. You know, in one sense, they're going to be your cheerleaders, but in a lot of ways too, they're also going to be the ones that tell you, hey, this actually wasn't done well. Here are the steps you need to take to fix it or do something better the next time.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we move on, I know one of the things that I don't think we've talked too much about on this podcast that I think there's a bit of confusion on is, what is a mentor? Right? Because it's not somebody who you sit down for coffee once a week and you say, hey, you know, will you be my mentor? And like, can we go steady? Will you just be my mentor?
Right.
Like, I don't think I've ever had just sort of one person. I've been fortunate enough to, I'm a salesperson by trade. And so I prospected and I found and I got referrals to a ton of different people that I can call on at a certain point in time when I'm like, hey, if I'm struggling with pricing, I call on my mentor, Steven. If I'm struggling with closing, I call on my mentor, Howard. If I'm struggling with, you know, this, I think just some, like, let's talk about like some clarity around what is a mentor and how do you find them?
So I think a mentor, if I had to go Merriam-Webster definition on mentor, a mentor is someone who you lean on for advice and knowledge to better yourself in this sense.
Sure.
You know, there's,
is it a paid relationship? Is it a something
it's
that
not, I, it's not a paid relationship. I think as far as the way that, you know, I think about it and the way that we've thought about it through Women in Sales. Now, there are phenomenal career coaches out there who can be great mentors, and those can be paid relationships. But all of the best mentors I've ever had in my career have been people who I cultivated relationships with. And there was giving on both sides, right? A mentor is not always someone that you just take from. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, they share knowledge in one way, and maybe you give back something that to you doesn't seem very big, but to them makes a huge difference. For example, we have a lot of people, a lot of women in the community who will come to us, they're SDRs. They say, well, you know, what am I supposed to give to a VP of sales that gives me an hour of their time? I feel so useless, because what could they possibly want from me? And even going back to the JD example, one of the responses is usually, offer to take a look at their SDR job descriptions and give them feedback on if this was a role that you would want to take. And if it's not, tell them why. That's so valuable. There's always a give and take. There's always a way that you can be helpful. And so I think for people who are seeking mentors and don't just want to be needy or seem needy and feel like they're always taking, offer, see how you can be helpful. At the end of the conversation, if there are things that you've promised to follow up with, do that and ask what you can do to be helpful to them. And that's how you build these relationships, and the relationships that stick, and there is that consistent kind of flow. You're meeting, grabbing coffee, doing a call once a month, or even once a quarter. Once a month is pretty consistent. I would say once a quarter is probably a good cadence for a lot of
mentors. Once a month is quite a bit, especially if you're tapping on like VPs of sales. Like,
right.
I bet you they don't even get a chance to sit down with all of their SDRs at their company once a month.
So once a quarter, I think is a great cadence, especially at the executive level, and always offering to help in return, because you never know what they might need help with. It might even be, hey, I want to go get dinner this week. What's your new favorite restaurant in town? It doesn't have to be anything super intense, but there's always something you can give back. And I think the people that are givers are the ones that end up getting the most out of their mentor mentee relationships.
Hmm. So talk to me about, how do we identify the people we should be going after, right? There's so many VPs of sales, or there are only so many, and there are, by law of mathematics, 10 to 20X as many SDRs or AEs, right? Like how do we get in the door, or how do we cultivate those relationships?
Yep. So I'd say you don't have to necessarily bat for the fences with your first couple, right? So as a SDR who's maybe a couple of months into your career, I probably wouldn't advise that this person reach out to Jamie Buss at Zendesk, because Jamie likely does not have the time to do that. Start with people that are one or two levels ahead of you. So a frontline manager and an enterprise AE, and reach out, see if you have a mutual connection. That's a great first step. Understand where your connections are. Explain why you're reaching out to them. Did you see them speak on a panel? What was it that they said on a panel that really stood out to you? Did you read a blog post that you were really inspired by? Pull out a quote from the blog post that you loved and tell them why this blog post was something that really hit home. And ask for some of their time. This is a total random aside. If you're reaching out for time with someone, abide by their schedule. The most frustrating thing in the world is when someone reaches out asking for time, and then you go back and forth for 7 email threads because you're being a pain in the ass about scheduling. Be kind of thoughtful and respectful of that.
Be aware that you're asking for somebody's time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then when you go into that meeting, make sure you're using the time effectively. I think it's great when people send emails ahead of time, ahead of this coffee, with some things that they want to touch on or questions they have. So you're kind of setting the agenda, right? And that's just a good tactic in sales as well. So if you can get in the habit of doing that consistently, it's a very good thing. And make sure you use the time efficiently, be early, and keep the relationship going. If you feel like you really hit it off with this person, follow up a couple of months later. If you read an article that reminds you of them later on, this is something that I learned from someone about a year ago, and I think it's one of the best pieces of advice, which was, if you read an article and you think of someone, I bet this person would really like it, don't stop there. Send it to them. There doesn't need to be an ask in that email. Just, hey, read this, made me think of you. Mm-hmm. Hope all's well. It's amazing how quickly those relationships will grow and blossom, because there wasn't an ask. You were thinking of this person, you added value to their day, and now they're thinking of you. And so then in 6 months, it's entirely possible something crosses their desk that makes them think of you, and you're top of mind. That's how you really start to grow and build these relationships.
That's great. And I love that you're like, you're recognizing the value that they're bringing, and you're trying to be prepared ahead of time, right? It's sort of, I think if I could summarize a little bit, it's sort of be easy to schedule time with, be early, be prepared. So send agenda ahead of time, see how you can return the favor, and then sort of stay in touch.
Yes. I think that hits on the main points.
Cool. And like generally probably pretty good sales prospecting more like account strategy principles. I don't know how we got there coming from, you know, a sales podcast, coming from somebody who spent a ton of time in sales. That's just a total mystery to me.
I know. Shocking.
Yeah. So what are we missing? Right. I feel like we've covered sort of why we need to talk, why we should find mentors. I think that makes sense. You know, what is a mentor? You know, it's somebody that you meet with on a somewhat regular basis, but the onus is on you to sort of generate that and continue kind of pushing the rock up the hill. Cause otherwise if you let it, you know, the onus is on you to sort of continue to book that. Cause if you just, right, if you fade, it's almost like they're doing you a favor in a way.
Right. And I think, you know, there are so many people that, especially in sales and especially with the rise of LinkedIn kind of being this new wave of social media almost, and now we have LinkedIn influencers, and there's so much noise out there. How do you separate yourself from the pack and make yourself someone that's not trying to just take for the sake of your own well-being, your own knowledge base, to say that you met with this person or you had coffee with this person? You know, I think really getting in the habit of giving first and trying to understand what someone else might need so they can grow in their career. It doesn't matter if you're an SDR. It doesn't matter if you're early in your career. There's always something you can give. And if you start training yourself on that very early, it's going to make you an even better salesperson as well, because you're constantly looking for value to add to your prospects. And this is kind of if we really zoomed out, it's just a good life lesson to think about what you can give before taking, because people will start honestly delivering things to you, and things will come to you. You'll have to, there won't be a forced kind of take when you give first.
Mm-hmm. It feels sort of like, to come full circle, almost like your relationship with Jordan, you know, how you met him mm-hmm. through Bowery, right? It yep. started off Absolutely. As maybe not necessarily a mentor mentee, but you were trying to find a way to offer value. He came to you for advice on how to find more women, and you started this, you did this panel that started this networking or this meetup that attracted a fairly strong audience on the first try. And now this is your full-time thing. And so it's, I think that you're the ultimate case study for this, because if you're, you know, continuing to try and provide value for people, it's going to create these opportunities for yourself.
It's interesting to look at it that way. And I think you're right. I mean, a lot of my career, even I look back and there wasn't a lot of deep strategy with the way things played out. And maybe that sounds kind of silly.
Spoiler alert.
but I think when you do every day as well as you can, and you position yourself to make others successful, good things come back. There is a boomerang effect. You know, I quite literally stumbled into Bets Recruiting because I was a legal clerk who wasn't sure what she wanted to do with her career. And a teammate from college told me that Bets was great and she loved her job at GuideSpark. So I went into Bets not knowing anything about recruiting or talent or what SAAS meant, because that's what I thought it was at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, a great career at Bets opened the door to meeting the team at Bowery. And then the team at Bowery and connections here in New York introduced me to Jordan, and Women in Sales was born. So I think there's a lot to be said about being genuine in the way that you approach relationships, and doors will open.
Right on. Alexander, I think that's a great place for us to transition to the lightning round. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing some stuff. I, especially on, you know, a subject that I think can, it's one of those like multipliers. It can have such a huge impact on your career. If you can listen to this episode and take some of this advice early on, I can say with certainty that I probably wouldn't be standing here if I hadn't been proactive about reaching out to my mentor network and tapping people for advice here and there, it's helped me create new business models, which have created new revenue. It's helped me hire people. It's helped me stop doing things that were getting in my way and probably going to cause me to fail.
Yep.
I could probably repeat that one like 6 or 7 or 12 times.
I don't think you're alone.
Yeah. So thank you for that. I want to jump to the lightning round because I think you've got a lot of information trapped away, and I'm really looking forward to the cold call role play, but we got to do the lightning round first. All right. So how do you get people to respond to your emails?
I never use the terms following up or checking in first and foremost.
Yeah.
Bump. And always, yep, bump. Always have a, you'll be shocked to hear this, always have a give. So I think that if I can provide something in that email that maybe calls out that I read an article about their company or calls out something that I read about them, and I end with a call to action. So some sort of question about what they're planning to do with that, or I ask a question about what they wrote in the article. I think I have an over 90% response rate on, even if it's, hey, thanks so much for reading this, kind of swamped right now, but really appreciate the thoughtful note. It goes a very long way.
Wow, fantastic. How do you deal with the brush off when you're cold calling?
I usually call back.
Persistence, I love it. Cool, and what do you do when you need to push at the end of the quarter?
So there's usually something coming up, and we're fortunate with women in sales to always have a panel or an event or something a month away consistently. We've usually got something every 3 weeks. And so there's usually some sort of call to action we can use there, which is, you know, hey, we really want to get you involved in this next one. We've already started marketing for this. We're 3 weeks out. You know, what can we do here? And so I think if there's a deadline or some sort of time that you can point to, that does tend to help and will help push the end of the quarter.
Perfect. Are you ready for the next section?
I think so.
Who am I? Where am I?
You are Colin, and you're the CEO of Predictable Revenue.
Okay. This would be a tough one.
Tough one to get
in character for.
Get ready.
Okay. Ready?
Ready.
Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. Alex over at Women in Sales.
How's it going?
Good, thanks. You have 5 minutes?
No.
I just wanted to sync really, really quickly. I chatted with Stacy on your sales team last night at an event, and she mentioned that it would be worth me giving you a call.
Oh, yeah, Stacy. Yeah, she's 6 months into the role.
Yep. That's what she mentioned, actually. And so as we were chatting, she said that she was unfamiliar with women in sales and what we were doing, but sounds like the team, especially the women on the team, I know you only have a couple, are really kind of craving some internal mentorship. What are you doing for the women on the sales team right now with career development and coaching?
Nothing. No, I'm kidding. Nothing. I mentor them.
What was that?
I mentor them.
You mentor them. Cool. And so what are you doing particularly to work with them on that mentorship?
We do one-on-ones, weekly one-on-ones, and then call review every other week.
Got it. Cool. Is there any sort of differentiated work that you're doing for maybe newer members of the team? Like Stacy sounds like she's only 6 months in versus other members of the team.
No, we do a bit of onboarding in the first month, 2 months, and then it's sort of going to the regular one-on-one check-ins.
Got it. Okay. So, you know, one thing that we've seen success with some other companies at your size, and something that Stacy mentioned that she would be really, really interested in, is being paired with a mentor through Women in Sales. So women that we've worked with, had on panels, that are part of our mentor community, you know, sales directors and above, who can work with younger sellers on basic career skills and taking more ownership of their careers in sales. Is that something that you feel like the team could benefit from?
Yeah, I was really going to throw another objection at you, but I thought, no, that's too mean.
Also, what was the objection?
Just no. I don't think that would be valuable.
No, so, I'm good enough. They don't need anybody else.
It's a balance between making it a real cold call, like a real feeling cold call, and coming off as just a total asshole. Sorry, hypothetical Stacy employee. I don't give a shit about you.
Right?
You don't even exist.
Yes. Yeah. It's even companies that have huge internal learning and development programs can benefit from having external resources on this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually where we tend to be the most helpful with a lot of these companies, is by giving them that extra arm and being the extension of their teams when it comes to learning and development.
Very cool. Yeah, I find it super helpful having an external person. We actually have somebody who's a mentor of mine who comes in and does call review with the team, with myself in the team. And we sort of do like a team-based thing, once a month, twice a month. And we basically get everybody to pick their worst calls. And we have a couple of beers and we sort of record it and go over, and he gets to sort of chime in. And, I think he and I, share a lot of common ideas about how to do things and why and when. But just having that third party perspective and bringing somebody external in that isn't your day-to-day boss just has such a huge impact, because you're hearing it not just from the person you're hearing it from all the time, you're hearing it from somebody else. And psychologically, we tend to value that so much higher when somebody else is confirming what you've already heard from somebody you're working with pretty closely.
Absolutely.
So that'd be really valuable.
The TO, like the timeout voice. The extra person that comes in and can be your champion in some ways, but also be the person that tells you you're both wrong, is really good.
Super helpful.
Yeah.
Right on. Alexandra, so this was super awesome. Thank you for coming on the show. I feel like I learned a bunch. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they're saying, hey, this sounds like I want some mentorship. I want some mentorship for my team. I want to do an event. I hear you're going to be in Toronto,
Or Vancouver.
Or Vancouver. How do they get in touch?
So you can find Women in Sales at womeninsales.io, and you can subscribe to our mailing list on there to hear about upcoming events. Our next event is going to be in San Francisco on June 25th at Samsara's office. And then we'll be back in New York and Boston this summer. And we are also launching Chicago in August and London in October. So keep an eye on everything for updates there.
Wow. As a Canadian, I have to ask, London, Ontario or London, England?
London, England.
Okay. London, Ontario is much closer.
It is closer, yes.
Less impressive. But,
It's amazing how many sales teams are in London. I think, so we have 16 corporate sponsors for WIS now, mm-hmm. and we have, I think, 5 of our sponsors with a London presence. So that's really kind of our third biggest market for our current sponsors, which is great.
Incredible. We're seeing similar on the coaching side, and people looking for the coaching and access to things like that. We see a ton of customers from the UK.
Yep. Yeah. It's been really exciting. We're also hearing Paris and Amsterdam as well. So I think the UK is going to be big in the next couple of years.
That's fantastic. My great timing. My co-founder, Aaron, is actually moving to Edinburgh in a couple of months.
Oh, wow. Edinburgh's beautiful.
I've never been. My ancestors are from Scotland, so I'd love to go sometime, but haven't been. Now that my co-founder is going to be over there, I guess I'm going to have to go visit. I'll be cursing because he's in LA now, which is like a 2.5-hour flight from Vancouver.
Oh.
Yeah.
It'll be a little different.
Yeah. All right. Alexandra, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great having you. We'll throw your LinkedIn in the show notes if anybody's looking to get in touch with you, as well as a link to Women in Sales.
Sounds good. Thanks, Colin.
Awesome. Thanks.